You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, J.D. Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, J.D., joined this week by a very fired up Chris Triplett and a not so fired up Chris McFeely. And I'm somewhere in the middle. So... It is Fanboy Versus the 99, as this is the 99th episode, not to be confused with the 100th episode, which will be our next episode.
So there you go. We should call it the not 100 episode.
This is the not 100 episode. Nicole is off doing cool things. She's at a special effects class. I saw some pictures from it. It looked pretty sweet.
Did it? Yeah. What was she making?
I didn't actually know that I saw what she was making. But I did saw somebody making like a, some sort of demonic pig face mask, and somebody was making like a gray.
I don't do well with pig monsters.
No,
I know it's a weird, it's a particularly weird thing, but pig monsters, get the fuck out. Willow, it was Willow's fault. Willow did it to me.
So like, you're not a fan of Spider-Ham then, are you?
Or the Gamorrean
monster.
The Gamorrean guard, I take it, is
They're green, so they don't really count. I mean like little real looking pig man things. They're nasty. Mm.
So that episode of Doctor Who where it was like the little pig alien.
That freaked the shit out of you, is what you're saying? That's what they call a behind the sofa moment over here.
Right.
Oh my God.
Behind the sofa.
Yeah. Little fucking pig walking about on two legs, his little trotters clack.
Anthropomorphic pigs, then, is your thing.
Right? If they have thumbs, they're all right. But whenever they have the gnarled trotters, it's like, pigs.
Sweet. Well.
Pig would eat you. Don't think a pig would.
Martian Manhunter's weakness is fire. Chris McFeely. Anthropomorphic pigs.
It's the pigs.
There you go. So. Speaking of anthropomorphic pigs, what's in the news this week?
Well, it's funny you should mention that. not a heck of stuff in the news this week. I think the biggest thing left over from C2E2 last week was this announcement regarding DC's Trinity War, which is supposed to be something that's happening next week, about which we don't have an awful lot of information, because we really just got a name. Now, obviously, Trinity, when in conjunction with DC, conjures up images of Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. But news has leaked out that the DC Free Comic Book Day comic, which is, Free Comic Book Day is 2 weeks away, I think, isn't it? First weekend?
I think it's 2 weeks.
I was trying to think a minute ago of what's going on that weekend. It's Free Comic Book Day. That's what it is.
There you go. That's the day that it is. Well, apparently that's going to introduce a trinity of some kind, one of which is Pandora. So it might be something to do with that trinity.
Ah.
Like they is have this trinity like the Triforce? Is this...
I don't know. Keep Ganon away from me.
Okay.
It all comes around. That's really all we know about it. That's a thing that's happening.
Okay.
That's about as much news as we have with that. Other than that, it's all bad news. With this rumor going around at the minute, it's not confirmed, but it's looking sickeningly likely, that this second season might be the last season of Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes.
God. I mean, do you want to see me slit my wrist live on TV?
Take a completely objective view, I guess, it's like, to me, it's not that surprising. This was in production long before the whole Disney-Marvel merger. And despite the fact it's wildly successful, Disney's not getting the dollars for it as much as they could if they were doing it under their own production and their own sort of methodology. And I actually talked with, I think, Barricade on Twitter about this too. You know, he was really mad at Jeff Loeb. And, you know, my take on it was that this was a far more corporate decision, I think, than...
I'm sure it was, but with Jeff Loeb at the pinnacle there, he's never going to look good.
No.
I mean, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is about Marvel cartoons and their production schedules the last couple of years, though, because nothing seems to be working. You know, they were rocking it for a few years there, and DC was on the back bar. I mean, DC just had Brave and the Bold. Not that I'm knocking Brave and the Bold, fantastic cartoon, Brave and the Bold, but that was all they had going on versus, you know, the real peak of the DC animated universe when it was epic cartoons for all ages. Marvel is really kicking DC's ass in the animated field, just at the same time as they were kicking their ass in the cinematic field as well. And now we've just hit this strange little wall where nothing has any legs anymore. And it's like, Spectacular Spider-Man gets cancelled as a product of the Disney thing again. And yeah. But no sooner is it cancelled. And that's, what, three years ago now?
It's and been a while, yeah.
No sooner is it cancelled than they're going, ah, Ultimate Spider-Man, brand new cartoon, Brian Bendis, new Ultimate Spider-Man, you will want to watch this. And it's taken them 3 years or whatever to finally get it out over here. And by the time they've finally farted it out, the title no longer has any bearing on the comic it's named after anymore. Ultimate Spider-Man's not about Peter Parker anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you look at Iron Man Armored Adventures, which is still trotting along, apparently, allegedly, that might even be going to a third season. But, like, that's a show that was in production as far back as the Fantastic Four cartoon of 2006 was in production, when that came out. Fantastic Four cartoon, it came out between the films. And they were talking, even at the time, about the Iron Man cartoon they had in production. And that took years and years to finally see the light of day. And when it finally did see the light of day, after the Iron Man film had happened, it was all Teen Tony in a completely different world from the one the films had introduced everybody to, because the cartoon idea was in production for so long before the film made the impact and introduced the world to Iron Man. Not that, again, that I'm knocking Armored Adventures. Armored Adventures is a lot better than you think it is.
Yeah, it's okay. I should watch it more. I've watched some of it on Netflix, but I haven't watched any of the newer episodes. I don't watch any of the new ones.
It's much better than it really has any right to be with its premise. It really manages to knock down a lot of the barriers to quality that are inherent in the very idea of the show. But, and you know, here we are now again with the same as the Avengers cartoon. How long has it been in production? And now they're talking about Canada already with the... Well, maybe the Avengers film will just cause explosive ratings and they'll change their minds about it. It's not set in stone yet, you know.
I doubt it. I think that it... I mean, because even the talk is that it's going to be, like, in the same universe as this Ultimate Spider-Man or whatever. I think that Marvel may be trying this deal where we talk about this Ultimate Spider-Man being shot at, you know, pointed at maybe a slightly lower demographic. It may be Marvel trying to, you know, because the complaint was that the show doesn't have, like, the big overarching, you know, concepts like some other animation stuff does. Or in plot points. And it's like, well, no, but if you want those, Marvel has a superb line of comic books that you can read.
What is this cartoon? What are you saying that doesn't have that?
The Ultimate Spider-Man. That it's a little too, no. You know...
Four episodes. You know, I'm not gonna decry any, like...
Oh, no. I'm not, and I'm not either. And like we said, the last episode seemed to be pointing in a direction of a larger world.
Yes, it did.
So, I was merely making the point that, you know, even if that is the case, you know, I think Marvel thinking strategically is probably going to be pointing in the direction of saying, you know, let the cartoons introduce kids to, you know, the concept of these characters. And then when they're old enough, then they can go in comic book stores or onto their Kindles and buy the comic books. That's a great idea.
Well, so, I thought Justice League did a good job with that. I mean, they introduced a whole bunch of characters. Hell, I didn't even know who they were. Yeah. Got me interested in. I mean, it seems like Avengers is doing that. I mean, because like there's a bunch of weird characters that are showing up. Like, no spoilers in the new episode, but like just obscure ass stuff that just shows up and
almost like a Dan Slott comic, I guess.
Yeah, kind of.
Well, Avengers is definitely Marvel's Justice League. So the fact that they would get rid of that is irritating too. I don't think there's a single person that would look at that and go, yes, that's a good idea, do that.
Well, especially considering how...
Except for somebody up high at Disney going, oh, money.
Yeah. And considering how, you know, on the defense of Earth Mightiest Heroes, it's considering how connected it is to the film universe, you know, it would seem that would be, you know, a nice bridge, but... I don't know. Like I said, this is all unconfirmed at this point, so, you know, who knows what they're going to do. But it wouldn't surprise me, I guess, is my point.
Well, at least they're still on top cinematically, even if DC does seem poised to overtake them in animation again.
There was one other thing I saw this week that I'll mention, too. I guess the rumor is that they're... I can't remember who... Guy Pearce? Is that what they said?
The cast for Iron Man 3 now?
Iron Man 3. Yeah. Based on the casting, it looks like they're going down the extremist route.
Yeah, he's supposed to be the guy that the scientist or something that was in the extremist.
Yeah.
Something like that.
there was some chat as well that we could be seeing Ben Kingsley in it.
Yeah,
as the villain, Mandarin. Maybe.
Villain yet to be named.
Somewhere my wife read Mandarin because she had no idea what it was, and she just said that, but I don't know.
I don't think anybody has said Mandarin yet, but they say that he's...
They've gone so far as to say that the Mandarin may not be the villain. You know, there seems to be more interest in denying it.
Yeah. So, yeah. I
don't know. At this point, for God's sakes, just make him the Mandarin. I mean, you got that 10 Rings group.
I know, it's reference. Like...
Think
about this, right? The Avengers movie... There's some sort of alien-ish looking ships and stuff, you know, Mandarin can get the rings from that, and it would be really awesome if Fing Fang Foom was in the movie, but I'm not going to, like, hope for that, but that would be sweet. And then
he was in that trailer following Iron Man. Didn't you see that trailer?
Right. So, you know, I don't know. That would be sweet. Dragon with pants. Anyway, but I don't know about the extremist thing. I mean, am I in the minority because I really don't like extremists? Not the comics. I haven't read them, but just the extremist, like, armor concept.
Like the idea. Okay.
Yeah.
I have no strong feelings about it.
they don't really make a reference to it that much anymore, do they? I mean, it's just like, he's just got this armor, and then if they need it story-wise, oh yeah, just so happens he's connected to the armor also.
Yeah, that's just kind of, I don't know.
I know. I mean, it's like the biological equivalent of just having a little beacon attached to his belt that makes the armor home in on him.
That's way cooler, though.
Well, sort of.
Anyway, it's the
briefcase armor will always
briefcase
be
armor's awesome.
Extremis armor, yeah. Right?
How do you top briefcase armor in Iron Man 3? Which I know they can't, but
yeah, I know.
Like yeah. I don't know, like a sports car. Turns into his armor. I don't know.
Something.
Or car turns into some kind of Hulkbuster armor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to have Hulkbuster armor in the next movie. That would be.
You could top it by giving me the fucking Mandarin!
Yeah. That would be sweet. Let's get the Mandarin. Or maybe the son of the Mandarin. He was really badass.
Look, it doesn't even matter. It can be a younger guy. He can play the role. It's still going to be the friggin' Mandarin.
I can't tell you the amount of.
I just want some dude with 10 magic rings.
You know, although I was just thinking, that issue where the Mandarin's son just beats the shit out of Tony in his armor, that was badass. Anyway, should read those. speaking of old comics, one more thing I want to mention, then we're going to get on with the show. And you guys may have experienced this, you probably all the time, Christopher Feely, but, you know, occasionally you may have a family member or a friend that says, hey, I have some old comics, do you want them? You know, and so I didn't even know this was happening. Like, I talked to my sister earlier in the week, and she's like, by the way, did your box show up? And I was like, box? She's like, yeah, we sent you a package. I was like, okay. She's like, yeah, it's just some old comics that her boyfriend had that didn't want anymore. I was like, oh, okay, whatever. So I get them. And it's an odd mishmash of interesting stuff. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, very 90s stuff in there, like the Gambit number one, and I thought was funny because we had talked about it.
Bitches love it.
Like issue 11 and maybe 24 of Spawn, issue 3 of Max.
The Max.
Oh, Max. Yeah. bunch of there's some older Fantastic Four stuff, like during Phoenix Saga and stuff. There were a couple of interesting things were in it. There was an issue from like 76 of Amazing Spider-Man, which was like, wow, that's kind of old. And a couple others that were like that, that were from like that same period, like, you know, 30 cent cover price, which was a little jarring.
Half of the Dave.
Oh, man. But the most exciting thing is I was talking about this, I think, on the show, you know, several months ago, that I was trying to get a hold of a copy of NFL Super Pro. Could not find one. My shop has one. But they have it in there was some comic that they had that was ridiculous and was in like one of those appraised packages, you know. I don't know what was in it originally, but they thought it was so ridiculous they took it out, and I probably long sold whatever that was. But they had one issue of the NFL Super Pro and they put it in that package. So on the wall in my shop is what appears to be like a fully appraised issue one of like NFL Super Pro, but it's still like 10 or 15 bucks and more than I wanted to spend on it.
Is that comic rare or something? No, I remember that when it was
not at all.
Show.
And that's why it's a joke. It's one of those deals where it's like totally a joke. but they didn't have any more copies of it. Well, lo and behold, as I'm going through, you know, I went through it once and there was just, you know, mostly that. It was like issue one of, Ghost Rider 2099 was in there as well. So
awesome.
Woo!
But I start looking and some of them are double bagged and I turn one of them over and there it is. Issue one of NFL Super Pro was in this stack. So, that made like the whole box, worth it. But anyway, it's kind of fun. You never know what you're going to get when people
start. And have you read it yet?
I have not. I mean, it's in the bag, and I've not. I mean, literally, I finished reading my stack about 5 minutes before I turned the stream on. So, or before I turned the show on.
I think
so
you need to do a future review of that at some point.
Yeah, I might have to. So,
who put that out? I mean, like, I don't even remember who put that
out. Marvel.
Is it Marvel?
Yep.
It's Marvel. Yeah.
I think what did it go? 12? Did it go 12 Spider-Man. Issues? I think.
I want to say. Maybe fewer.
Yeah.
Dude, if they wanted it to go longer, they should have put them on the Avengers.
Hey, it's not 2006 where you just stick the pop guys on the Avengers.
This was the 90s. Oh, you should have put them on the X-Men. I'm sorry.
Yeah, everybody went
He's got a mutant power for playing football.
It did go 12 issues, yes. I just looked it up.
They didn't even have to be mutants to be in the X-Men in the 90s. It was like...
You just hang around with them. Carol Danvers hung around with them for a while.
I mean, Deadpool isn't even a mutant, and he hung around with them for a while, so...
It turns out that, you know, Rogue was, like, stealing his powers, and that's why he was around the mansions for so long.
Oh, my God. So, anyway, fun story there, so... And thanks to...
They eventually had to kick him off the team because he was no use in their baseball games that they always played because he was only good at football. Nobody wanted to play football.
Yeah.
X-Men played baseball.
That's it.
He would have been perfect on the Avengers because they play a softball game like every year with the West Coast Avengers.
God.
Oh, wait, no, that doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, no more West Coast.
It should! With the new Avengers and, like, you know, the regular Avengers, God, that would be awesome.
Oh,
you gotta watch
God.
Out for Hawkeye. He cheats.
He does.
New Avengers have got Thing and Luke Cage on the team.
Who's
the strong guy on the regular Avengers? Ian?
NFL Super Bro actually has a powered suit. Like, his suit actually has, like, I don't know. It's got strength enhancers and stuff in it.
Like Iron Man.
Wacky. Yeah. Kind of weird Iron Man, Captain America combination deal. But he plays football, so there you go.
That's amazing.
That's great. So,
a licensed tie-in thing, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah, it was paid for.
Was he an actual football player? I don't even know who he was.
No, I don't know.
I wasn't quite like that.
No, he was a fictional character in that respect, but it was licensed by the NFL. And the NFL is like, oh, this isn't doing anything. Okay, cancel that. I don't even know who wrote it at this point. I don't even know where they went on to.
Turns out it was Jeff Loeb.
There was, yeah.
Fabian Nicieza actually wrote
Loeb.
It.
Oh, God, really?
He had a terrible habit of writing a lot of those weird, bad 90s comics back then.
Oh,
I will say, though, going through those 90 comics and just skimming them, it's amazing how monogamous, homogenous, really, they are. Mm-hmm. You know, it didn't really matter what title, who was drawing it, what company it was. It's like they all looked almost identical. Really kind of creepy.
You really take for granted, like, comics today. Like, when you say, like, oh, this comic's not that good, put it up against a comic from the 90s. You might actually like it a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's
the photocopy of Darkhold.
I mean, that's the deal, is that, you know, comics now have such striking, I mean, you know, one title to the next looks so different, and yet, you know, I'm looking through some of those 90s comics going, God, this all looks like the same person. You know?
Yeah, they all look like Rob Liefeld, because that's what was happening. They were copying the 90 image look.
Yeah, it's scary. There was some image stuff in there, too. But...
Cross-hatching!
Scary. All right, well...
Foreshortening.
The good old days that weren't quite that good.
No.
God. Mm-hmm. But there are people out there who think they were.
Yeah.
Hmm. What was my comment on the 90s triplet that I said to you, that no line could be too jagged and and too much ink was never enough?
Yes.
So. We miss you, 90s.
Yes, we do.
No, we don't.
Oh, yes, we
do. Oh, there was one issue I was going to ask you about, because Felix, see if you knew anything about the death of Clark Kent. Like a white cover with, like, Kent's glasses, like, broken, but then a Superman symbol reflected in them.
I don't know for certain or anything about it, but I would.
But I didn't read it.
I don't know the comic, but I would assume that maybe the Superman cartoon episode by the same title, which is about how Superman has to fake Clark's death to keep somebody in order to like bust a criminal, something like that.
There was like that episode where like Clark Kent was in the car and it goes like over the cliff and like everybody saw it. It's like, oh shit, I guess I can't be Clark Kent anymore. And they gave him a
That might have been it. Yeah.
I don't know. I'll have to look at it.
I couldn't quite remember.
It's it's written. It's a Jurgens issue, so it's in that stack. I might, like I said, I might read some of those and I might pull something out and review at some point, but. Anyway,
I love the 90s Superman. I haven't read that in a while.
There was another one where he's like burning his suit on the cover, and like that's where.
Oh,
the
here we go.
Is.
The story. It was a an 8-part story running for 2 months across the various Superman titles in 1995, in which Superman was unable to retain his Clark Kent identity when Conduit strikes at his friends and family. Remember him? Yeah, you do.
Is that another one of those Jurgens invented villains that showed up for one thing and then never appeared anywhere again?
Let's see. Yes.
Yes! See, what did I say? When I reviewed that JLI issue, I was not making it up. Like, this is a Jurgens thing.
Wait, hang on.
Oh, come on.
And for weeks with messages that he knows can capture Superman. Shadow Dragon. Subsequent battle.
To be fair, he probably showed up in an annual a little while later. Cause
also written by Jurgens.
Oh, no. Yeah, no, hang on. There it is. Date of death. No. He died in not even the last part, the second to last part of the story. Yeah. He was made of green pipes and a unitard from the look of things here.
Oh my God. I almost want to have Dan Jurgens on again just so he could be like, so what is it like inventing these one? How do you do it?
Bursts of kryptonite energy. He had advanced training in covert operations and intelligence gathering as well as hand-to-hand combat skills.
I don't know. I mean, it's not hate at all. It's not hate at all. I mean, I really love it. It's just hilarious to me. You know, that Jurgens is able to just come up with these, like, you know, villains that just most time just do not stick and do not show up. Anywhere.
Okay, he was a classmate of Clark's in Smallville.
Okay.
Born on the same day the rocket arrived on Earth.
Wow.
How come that guy wasn't in Smallville? He should have been in an episode.
That would have been awesome.
Oh, okay. Truck broke down on the way to the hospital. And Kenny was exposed in utero. He was born on the side of the road and was exposed to some kryptonite that had come down along with the rocket that very night. So he has, kryptonite powers.
Of course.
Yay!
That is so awesome.
That's the best power to happen when you're in a Superman comic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's handy, certainly.
Yeah. That is hilarious. I love
but
that.
But you're not going to rob a lot of banks with that.
This is not hate at all. Yeah. I'm serious. I love that Juergens does that. I mean, it's just so hilarious to me. So, anyway. All right. Well, that aside, I guess, we shall move on. March forward. Get our reviews done for poor Chris McFeely. If you're watching the video, you can see that he's not feeling very well. So, we will.
We don't want him to collapse on the show.
No. That would be bad.
Yeah.
That would be very bad. So, Chris Triplett then. It is to you, sir.
Because I'm talking about Justice League this week. Justice League number 8, which is I don't know if it's a big issue or not, but it's the issue where is there going to be a new member on the Justice League team? And is
spoiler.
It going to be Green Arrow? I don't think that's a spoiler. He's on the cover. You know?
No, I mean, Green spoiler, no.
Yeah, spoiler, no.
Yeah. The story is basically about the who are the kind of politician watchdog guys that are kind of keeping their eyes on the Justice League. I mean, who exactly is
Council
that?
Of World Security of Protection of the generic political Washington.
Yeah, those guys.
Yeah.
They're like urging Steve Trevor to get them to put somebody else on the Justice League. I think they basically want somebody. They control somebody, that's working their interest, and he's kind of telling them, that's not going to happen, and that's pretty much how the issue starts. And it starts in sort of like the middle of a fight next, in which Green Arrow is shown up to a fight with the Justice League, not fighting them, but they're fighting somebody else, and like off page, it turns out they were fighting Amazo. So they beat Amazo off, just off panel. It's like it just kind of starts and it's over.
What?
And
a fight off panel? That's exciting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you don't.
It's from Green Arrow's perspective.
Yeah.
Okay.
Green Arrow's sort of running around and it just kind of starts off and he says, "What the hell am I doing here?" And there's like explosions going on in the background and some green energy shooting at him and him with a bloody nose saying, "You're playing with the gods now, Ollie." You know. It just sort of, the next page, it's like Amazo, he's been taken out by the Justice League. And it's just kind of a funny little scene because they don't really notice that Green Arrow's there. And then he just sort of, just comes out and just says, that was incredible.
Much like most readers.
They'd notice him if he had a beard.
They would. Yeah, he doesn't have a beard.
Why is Roy in green? I don't understand.
Really?
when he was bleeding and then it was showing a long distance shot for a minute, I thought he had the goatee. I was like, did he grow the goatee? Awesome. But no, it's just blood dripping off his chin. But you get this great little scene where he's talking about how awesome it was and all this fight. And they're he says something about how, we took him down, we were a great team or something. And they're like, what are you talking about? What did you do? And then he turns Amazo over and he shot him in the butt with an arrow.
Nice.
What do you think that is?
Yeah, he's pointing down at it. What do you think that is? But it's just great. I mean, he's basically just comedy fodder for this issue, but he's almost a super fan of the Justice League, the way they play him, because everywhere they go throughout the issue, whatever kind of menace that they run into, he's there, and he's in the thick of the fight, and he just keeps asking him, I need to be part of your team, you need to put me on your team, and it's always no. It's just no, and they're not even considering him. And he's got some sort of a history with Aquaman. I mean, is that...
Yeah, I like that. That's a brand new story. But it's the suggestion is that Aquaman saved him from the tropical island he was stranded on. being stranded on a tropical island is, believe it or not, if you don't know, Green Arrow's origin. Stranded
really?
On a tropical... Yes, that's what happened. He got stranded on a tropical island, and he had to learn to hunt to survive and became good at bows and arrows.
and he got to do that. Found a way off the island, and you know, he decided to quit being the dick he was, and you know, change, because he was a dick before. That was the whole point. He was a rich.
He was dick. A dick. Okay.
Yeah.
It's essentially Tony Stark crossed with Batman.
I was gonna say. Yeah.
I love this one from Green Lantern, though. You know, Green Arrow is petitioning to join, and Green Lantern says, "We already have one guy who can't do anything. If Batman sprains his ankle, we're gonna call. We'll call you."
Totally lying. We wouldn't call.
God.
Yeah. Yeah, we've already got one Green
thing
gal.
This issue,
if you change the name to Blue Arrow, we'll think about it.
The thing about this issue, I think, is that where last issue really failed to make me believe that these guys had been together for any length of time, and that it wasn't just 6 weeks later, like after the Dark Side story, this one issue really does succeed in making me believe that these characters have been around each other for an awfully long time and are now pretty comfortable playing off and ragging on each other.
I sort of feel like this should have been that next issue.
Yeah.
Like the issue that we got, it did
that
not
should have just been like a prologue, an epilogue issue to the first thing. It didn't convey the passage of time at all.
Yeah, but yeah, like even like if they didn't like reference things that are happening like right now, like I was talking about before the show, that you know they have a mission where they're taking out some of the Talon guys from the whole Night of Owls storyline over in Batman. Even if that wasn't there, you would still get that sense that hey, yeah, they've been fighting together for a while, and you know they've got. Go ahead.
Telling me I dropped this like just when it was like turning around, or
well, hopefully.
Hopefully, yeah.
It's a good issue, anyway.
It's a good issue, yeah. I mean, it's basically like I was saying, just a bunch of series of missions that they go on, and Green Arrow just shows up and he helps them take them
down.
We
get a little look at something that's going to happen in Justice League Dark next month, you know.
Yeah.
It jumps forward a month and we see that, you know, just a little look of, what do you say, am I in? Cup two. You could have at least dropped me near a bus stop!
Yeah, that was great. Yeah. So, like, yeah, Green Arrow, he just, you know, like, you know, Feely said, yeah, he's not getting on the team. They won't let him on the team. No matter what, they're not letting somebody else be on the Justice League. And then, like, at the end, kind of at the end of the issue, Steve Trevor comes and, you know, has a conversation with him, and you kind of get some of, what Green Arrow is trying to do, and it kind of seems like it's not so much. I mean, it is a little bit selfish. I mean, it's something he wants, but it kind of feels like he's wanting to do more. Like maybe, like I was saying before the island, he was a dick, and then like after the island and everything he went through, you know, he's now trying to maybe make up for the crap that he did before, and he thinks if he's on a team, maybe he can do more. You know, this he's like I need. It's like the world needs this, and he says I need this. You know, in this conversation with you know Steve Trevor. And he kind of tells them that, you know, they're not going to let you on the team. You know, they won't do it. But then he makes reference to this other team that could really, really use Green Arrow. And they don't really talk about what that other team is. They just kind of leave it, you know, and it kind of looks like Green Arrow is going to, you know, join this other team. And that's why when I was asking, is this like Justice League Dark or is this some book that I'm not getting? And you mentioned something about maybe JLI. Do you think JLI is where he's going?
I mean, I don't watch it. It's hard to say if it's going to be JLI. I mean, obviously I'm reading JLI. I don't recall any kind of inclination that Green Arrow was going to show up there. And they've done a pretty good job of trying to keeping that international extension on the JLI. I mean,
has
really,
Steve Trevor showed up any in JLI at all?
No.
No? Okay.
No. So, I mean, because you're like, you think about the JLI, really, you know, as far as Americans go, you've got Guy and, I mean, I guess you could count Booster, but...
He's Canadian.
He's a future American, isn't he?
Yeah.
I don't...
But he's from the future, so, you know, it's kind of like that line. And no, he's not Canadian, okay? That's dirty.
He's from the undiscovered country.
That's a dirty... Dirty word, all right? Never speak ill of Booster. Anyway. that's so
they take
horrible.
Off,
I can't believe you're trying to imply that Booster's a filthy Canadian. That's just wrong. Anyway, but otherwise, you know, everybody else on the JLI is international. I think it would be odd to throw another American on that team. So it's not that they wouldn't do that, but
yeah, yeah. I didn't know. I just was wondering, like, where are we getting that? And is that something where, oh yeah, you know, that Green Arrow book, we're still publishing it. Go buy it and find
yeah.
out where it's going. Maybe that's what it is, but you know,
yeah.
not going to go that far.
Who knows?
But something else we learned that's important in the course of this issue. It's actually the very first line of dialogue, which didn't strike me properly until somewhere into the book, is the revelation here, which is a big history changer as far as things that we know, is that the Justice League have never actually allowed anyone else on the team. It's always been these guys.
Yeah, and then they explain why at the end of the issue, which yes, I thought was the most interesting.
One time they did let somebody else on the team, very briefly, and it didn't end well, and there's a big double-page splash.
Yeah.
A splashback. Oh, I don't know, should we say?
Should we say or not?
Well, I won't.
You know, kind of, we'll tell you, maybe we should tell you after the show, because
it's pretty huge. Yeah. Things go down, and they don't go well, and because they don't go well, they're never letting anybody else on the Watchtower, is what they say.
That person is still out there.
Yeah.
Oh, so can I reference this to something we talked about before the show and say that that's who you're talking about?
I don't remember what we talked about.
Yeah, if you're talking about what I was talking about.
Yes, I'm talking about what you were talking about.
Yeah. Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, I mean, I flipped the page and I just went, oh, shit.
Because, like, that's the one thing I was not expecting from this issue. I was thinking throwaway issue, Green Arrow, and then I turned the page and was like, holy crap, you know?
Wow.
I'm interested in where this is going, you know? And that's basically how the issue ends. And we've also got the Shazam backup. Do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, I enjoy the Shazam backup. Yeah.
The Shazam backup was good. I mean, it was...
This is really like chapter one. This is where we're really falling into a properly paced story where we're not rushing to hit all the major beats in one go. That was really like an issue zero, like a prologue. Then with the big teaser, this year it's Shazam at the end of it last week as well. This is like how long is this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7... Yeah, 10, 1, 2, 3, 4.
It's just a couple of
pages. Yeah. It's a 10-page strip, you know, but this is, like, there's no voodoo, magic stuff in this. This is just about Billy Batson.
Yeah, he goes to that foster home that they were talking about in the first story, and he meets his family, and it turns out his family's a lot bigger than he was expecting.
Indeed.
Which, at first, when I saw all the characters that was in it, I don't know why I was thinking this, but I was thinking it's the kids from the Flashpoint.
It is.
Is some of them the kids from the Flashpoint?
No, it's all of them. They're different ages, but it's them.
Wow.
Well, I mean, because, like, one's Mary, and one's Freddy, and I was thinking, were they in
Flashpoint?
I couldn't remember.
They were. Okay.
But, like, the little girl, it seems like I remember the little girl was there with the big, hair, and everything. And the other two, I was thinking they were there also, but I wasn't sure. I didn't know if I was maybe remembering.
Pedro, Eugene, and Darla. Latin American, Asian, and African American. Just hitting all the multicultural.
Oh, man.
Remember that episode of Family Guy where Stewie goes to the foster home and there's a child of every ethnicity there? It's that.
Wow.
Yeah, basically. But, it's basically just, them meeting up with these characters and him, Billy's still a dick, because the lady takes him to the house and, she's calling her old maid and she says pest and he says prune face, and he's just a little ass. And, he gets there and it just seems like, the perfect little, family, they're all like... Yeah. We got rules, and one of the rules is, watch out for everybody else. You take care of your brothers and sisters and all this stuff.
Who wants some hot chocolate? I do! Well, that sort of stuff,
Yeah, really, that's
really, I don't quite know how to describe it, really wonderful, lifey sort of Bing Crosby. Well, it's a wonderful, wonderful house we got here, sort of.
Wow.
This is where, the Gary Frank art really comes in good, because he's, good at expressions and faces, and, Billy is just, it's like he's in hell, But he's so nice and perfect, and, the little girl's, hugging on him and everything, and he's just, God, get off,
So like they leave the living room, and they go up so the kids are going to show him his room, and the little girl is just, you know, talking to him and about the rules and all this stuff, and he just blasts her and says, "I'm not your brother. We're not family. None of you really are." And the little girl just breaks into tears and runs away. Gary Frank's art's awesome.
That poor girl. Yeah.
You know, and Mary just grabs him and like throws him into a room and just starts, you know, what the hell, you know, what are you doing, you know, you just made her cry and all this stuff, and you know, you're just kind of like getting the setup of some of the characters and see where it's going, and you kind of get to see Billy's kind of, you know, maybe not as bad as a guy as
the
he is.
The dicketry is exactly what you expect it to be. It is just some child's defense mechanism. This is what I was waiting for. It took no time at all. He's alone in his room. He pulls out what seems to be like a photo album or something. There's a picture of his parents, and the mask cracks a little bit, you know. It's going to all the right places. Plus, the book's got Talkie Tony on the front of it, so we're already sprinkling in little extra bits of Marvel lore there as well.
Yeah, he has.
Also,
like
I just love this drawing of his parents. I just look at that Gary Frank rendition of his dad. Like historically, I'm not sure who the first to do it was, but Billy's dad. I think maybe Jerry Ordway did it first, because I think that was the first story to really involve like Billy's parents. I don't know, I might be wrong. C.C. Beck and Otto Binder might have done it back when. But like Billy's dad just looks like Captain Marvel.
Yeah, he does. I just noticed that actually.
Ordway always used to draw it like that as well. And I don't know what it is about this particular drawing of it, but Gary Frank has just nailed that ever so slightly odd, unreal, golden agey, Beck and Binder looking character, and just turned him into Frank's art has a tendency for, you know, real photorealistic expressions. That doesn't look real, but he really like sculpts real faces on them, and he somehow managed to do it with the classic Captain. It's just such a little thing in the story, but I just really, really, really love the way his dad looks in this picture. I'm hung up on it.
I'm just glad that he's not like gonna be like the dick the whole series. That like, you know, that is going away, and like they're, you know, taking their time with it, and just a little moment at the end where it's like, I didn't mean to make her cry, and then there's like the lightning flash, and you see, I guess that's the wizard's face in the clouds, and it's like, oh, you know, something's coming. But when is it getting here though? Because that's two stories, and he still hasn't been Captain Marvel. Is it gonna happen in the next one?
I would say probably. Well, the next issue is called Magic. Is his next Magic, and I'm guessing he'll probably be whisked away in the next chapter.
Yeah, but I'm liking it. I think it's cool. I mean, I buy Justice League because I want to buy Justice League, and I view Shazam as that's that nice little extra, you know, that I'm getting.
I'm not buying the book for Shazam or anything, but I'm.
But you know what?
I'm very happy. I'm almost buying it for Shazam.
but you know what? If they put out Shazam and they put out Gary Frank,
I would buy that.
Geoff Johns, I would buy that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it was pretty good. I mean, you might want to rethink, JD. You might want to rethink Justice League.
Just off the back of that issue, it was a good, fun, done-in-one that sprinkled in a couple of really interesting nuggets about. Well, there's also like an interesting thing in there about how every couple of thousand booms, the Justice League accidentally get ported back to Apocalypse, you know? So they've been there twice in the intervening years.
Yeah.
Well, you let me know if the next issue is good. If the next issue is good, then I might pick it back up.
We need to look at number 9 and see if they can kind of continue with this.
So.
Well, this is the villain's path. Is the next story start? This next multi-part story that's starting next issue.
So cool, awesome. All right, on to me then, I guess. Amazing Spider-Man: Ends of the Earth.
Awesome.
Woo! Yeah. You know, we're going to talk.
I hear that looked good.
We're going to talk about AVX later, but it's still worth mentioning that Dan Slott can shove into two issues more stuff than can be shoved into two issues of anything else.
Yes.
Because half of the first issue is about as far as we've gotten into. As much story has happened in the first half of Ends of the Earth is about as much story has happened in Avengers vs. X-Men so far.
Like, how many issues have there been of Innsverse? Is this two. The third issue?
No.
This is the
this
second.
Is part two.
Oh my god, are you seriously? This is only the second issue?
Yeah.
Holy shit!
Yeah. No, this is part three. No,
is it part three?
Yeah, this is part three.
Even at that, though, think about that. Just think about that for a minute.
Yeah, but like the difference is AVX is, what, 12 issues? They gotta spread that out.
I guess so. Spread it out a lot.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll talk about that. So, brief as I can briefly overview this comic. Black Widow gets rescued by a shadowy figure, the rest of the Sinister Six, well, the Five, I guess. because, of course, Electro has been...
He's in space!
Blasted into space! Electro in space! Oh, I'm sorry, anthropomorphic pigs. We can't do that. let's see. They round up basically the remaining Avengers, and a bit of a distraction gets an escape for Spider-Man, who turns out has been rescued by Silver Sable, which should not be a surprise because that was, I think, part of something earlier that happened. So,
there was a parade.
Yeah, there was a
she's been around.
Or something. She was there. She was there.
Yeah, she was there. She was around. Yeah. But it also turns out that Horizon Labs has hacked into Spider-Man's equipment, and they're going to help him out. Now, they're on a floating laboratory in international waters, which is sweet.
Doing science, just like that's where they conducted all their immoral illegal experiments or something like that.
Sure. Yeah, I don't think we talked about the last issue. They... Jameson shut them down.
He shut down the power to their to their building, which effectively shut them down. So they're going to help him out over international waters, which is sweet because his suit turned out to be not as effective as he had wanted it to be, of course. Doc finally gives his demands to the world. He's like, okay, you've had enough time. Here's what I want. I want $1,000,000 for all my friends. And
he wants $1 billion.
$1 billion. I'm sorry. $1 billion. No, it's got to be more than that. It's got to be like a bajillion dollars.
$1 billion. That's not a real number.
1960s money, it might as well be a bajillion dollars. and he also wants a doctor school for kids who don't know science so good. It's got to be at least...
I want to learn to do science better.
but it's got to be at least three times as big.
And he wants all of their criminal records expunged.
Yeah,
also.
He wants their records expunged.
Still not coming off as massively evil, though. I can't believe
not.
This is all.
I want a school named after me. Big fucking deal. You got it, son. Fix the Earth. Go.
This is all.
You get something named after you. Yeah, no problem.
Do we buy for a second?
You didn't have to ask.
Yeah.
But do we buy for a second that this is it? I mean, this is a distraction.
I mean, obviously, he wants to leave his legacy, but I can't believe a statue in front of a school is all he wants.
No, this is all a distraction for something else. There's obviously something. I mean, I think it seems obvious that there's something else going on.
That comment that Rhino says really gets me thinking, too. He says, Octavius has offered me a different kind of payment.
I'm like...
He's like not happy, and Sandman's like, you know, come on, cheer up. You're gonna be like the richest dude you know.
Sandman's not in on the joke. Like, you get a feel. I mean, because he's obvious. I mean, they even made reference that he was an Avenger at one time. I mean, he's been a more heroic character in the past.
He's been a hero for a long time.
I mean, I like that Dan Slott brings that up because nobody ever brought that up.
He was in the first issue of Silver Sable, even. I have that.
The deal was, I've actually just read it recently because it was in Essential Marvel Team-Up Volume 4. He had a really bad experience where he and Hydro Man were fused together. But after he separated himself, he was so shaken that he decided, you know, that's it. I can't do this anymore. I'm going to go straight. And the Thing agreed to help him. You know, and of course, they were old sparring partners because... I think Sandman used to remember the Frightful Four. Thing agreed to help him prop style. And he turned good, and he joined the Wild Pack, and he became an Avenger. He was an Avenger, for God's sake. That's when we're talking about weird characters being the Avengers. I guess you could have put NFL Super Pro on the Avengers. Sandman was an Avenger.
This and issue then, featuring Super Pro and Sandman, yeah, that would have happened.
Oh, yeah. God.
Well,
and then what happened was that Howard Mackey and John Byrne decided to shit all over Spider-Man in the year 2000.
Chapter one.
That was all Byrne, but it was the same thing that happened at the time. That was the relaunch when they said Amazing and Peter Parker back to number one for the first time. And Byrne and Mackey and Romita Jr. And turned out Sandman had been pretending he was good all along.
Oh, whatever.
And then,
am I misremembering, or was he also like the brother of Norman Osborn? Also, didn't that happen?
Was chapter one. That was chapter one. Said that they shared a grandmother because they had similar hair. Chapter one doesn't count anymore. So chapter man was actively retconned out.
Thank God.
But then I think it was Tom DeFalco maybe who later I can't remember who wrote it, but there was a story in a Spider-Man annual where they fixed that sort of by explaining that the wizard of the Frightful Four had used his id machine, which was a machine from old Lee and Kirby Fantastic Fours, and it was a machine the wizard had used to warp the thing's mind and turn him against the Fantastic Four for drama. He used it on the Sandman to turn him back into his old criminal partner. And he did, and they've never gone back on it.
Wow.
Huh.
Yeah. You think that's something that would be easily undoable, but they have never gone back on it. And subsequent writers have tried to play the Sandman a little bit more, you know, gray. I mean, I think it was the first issue of Marvel Team-Up. It was a Marvel Team-Up, anyway, way back when, that actually introduced his sick, his ailing mother, you know, that he never wanted to learn about his criminal activities. So that seed was already there, you know. And so then later, I remember there was a story, Paul Jenkins' Spectacular Spider-Man, I want to say, when Venom had taken a bite out of Sandman over in one of the major stories, and it actually is in complete contradiction to what happens in this issue, but never mind. Sandman couldn't hold himself together anymore and just discorporated. But the whole issue leading up to his death was him writing a letter to his mother, just apologizing for everything he'd done before he finally died at the end.
But
so they've done things like that. And I'm actually, yeah. I don't. It was quite recent. The wizard popped up in Spidey, didn't he? And he said something up to the Sandman about. Intelligentsia popped up, didn't they? Sandman. Yeah, was that the That was the one shot issue, the Sinister Six issue, where they went after the Intelligentsia. Sandman made a wizard made a remark about the id machine and turning Sandman back to crime.
I remember that.
Wow. See,
that's backstory you don't need to know.
Like I said though, it lends to this point that, you know, Mark, he's really got this. You know, he's like, all right, I'm going to get that $1 billion. I'm going to be able to expunge my record and get with my girl. And then Rhino is kind of like, nah, I'm doing something else. And you're kind of like, what does he know that Sandman doesn't know?
I'm wondering if Dr. Octopus has offered to find a way to kill the Rhino so he can go and be with his dead wife.
That could be something right there.
Possibly.
Yeah.
With inside intel, Spider-Man figures out what Ock's trying to do and locks onto, with the help of Black Widow, finds one of the installations where he's building his satellite. So,
right around here that this turns into some kind of video game.
Yeah, really.
Gotta go to the desert level.
And we have to go find the desert level. It's very true.
They'll probably go to like the haunted village where they'll fight Mysterio.
He needs the enchanted boomerang so that he can defeat the boss.
No. Yeah. But this is great though, because it comes up with this.
We'll go to the ice world for the final stage.
God, I know.
In there with his machine.
But he's got his pink hippo app. He's got his suit tricked out. He goes in, and I love this moment where he's talking about, we're just going to go in like Luke and Han, and we'll, you know, take over one of the suits, and then we'll just infiltrate the place. No, it's all run by Octobots, so screw that.
Yeah, Cyril Saber makes that comment. He says, you should have known any excuse for you to put on a new costume.
I know, which is hilarious. But one of the things they do find is the satellite boxes are empty, which is no surprise, I think. I think obviously there's something going on. So it was either, but it was also like this weird trap where it's like, you know, like, aha, we knew you would take the bait and you would go to the desert. Yeah. So it's, aha, I knew I knew you knew that I would come here and that you would be here. He's like, aha, but did you know like, that we knew that you knew that when we come? Anyway.
It's not so back and forth. It's just like her people there at, you know, the UN or whatever said, hey, you know, you might want to go to the desert because that's where they're building them.
Right. but there was just a little touch of that, aha, but did you know that I knew that you knew and then I would come here?
Yeah, Sandman even goes, ha-ha, on the next speech.
Ha-ha! The basic gist of this fight is fighting Sandman, but Spider-Man, being brilliant, has figured out that somewhere in that whole mass of sand that is Sandman, there's one important grain that holds his consciousness and everything, and that one grain is the important one. So he's built his suit to be able to see the grain based on his brain patterns, and has also built this Pink Hippo app, which beams thoughts and images straight into his mind. So they use it to, like, he's about to smash them, and they all say dome and type it into the, you know, into the app, and it beams the thought and it makes a dome and protects them. And
yeah,
they use it to freak him out, and he actually hides the grain for a minute. But Spider-Man, knowing Sandman all too well, knows that the key beating him is his heart, and yep, pulls out his daughter's name, and that distracts him long enough that he's able to latch on to that one little grain of sand and catch it in a ball of webbing, and thus another member of the Sinister Six falls.
That's the the Sinister Four.
The Sinister Four.
The Sinister Four. But, yeah, I think he makes a comment like that. Then he says,
yes,
like,
yeah, now, he does, that the Sinister Four. No. Yeah.
But,
you know, when he was making Sandman change all the shapes, I kept thinking that it was going to be something goofier, that it was going to be going back to the Pink Hippo thing. It's like, you know, what are you thinking about, Pink Hippo? You know, and then he was just going to be like, what the hell? And then he'd just, you know, grab it and stop him or something.
An enormous hippo or something.
Ramos was the best choice for the artist on this one as well. Like, Brain's gone. The other artist has been drawing Ends of the Earth thus far, but Ramos has stepped in for this one, and really, you know, I think he was the right choice for one with the big crazy shape shifting sand monster.
Oh heck yeah!
Yeah, he is totally Sandman's artist. That's for him. That's
I mean, this is big Sandman. You know, he's only in for the last couple of pages for the fight, but, you know, good luck trying to do a Sandman fight that's going to top this one in the future.
Yeah, I mean,
Spider-Man writers.
It's in the desert, so he's got access to all the sand he can want.
God, that's just amazing. Because, like, I mean, have we even got a story?
Never happened before.
Because they've never been in the desert. He's always in New York, so, you know.
Yeah.
Because Spidey's never had a reason to go to the desert.
Yeah. Nor the money.
Spidey's been to the savage land. I'm sure they could have thought of a reason.
Yeah, but you know. But also, here at the end, Doc lets out yet another one of his demands, which is that the Global Menace Spider-Man be captured.
Yeah, he asked them to take him out. So, oh my god.
So
what's going to happen the next issue?
I don't know. It's craziness. It's good, though. I like it.
So, like, I keep going back to thinking, like, you know, what if Doc Ock's not so much bad guy? I mean,
there's no way. I'm with Peter.
It's like, nice work, Spidey. Yeah, that'll be the typical ending, because it's like, yes, me, Doc Ock. I just really wanted a school named after me. Ah, now I'm dead. And it's like, and then Spidey will have to live through that guilt forever.
I kind of feel like that's his real plan. Not to save the world, not to do all these things, but just to make Spider-Man hate it again.
Oh, well, that'd be awesome, actually. Yeah.
I feel like that's why it ends of
the final humiliation of Spider-Man.
I think that's why it's called Ends of the Earth, because I think that's where he's going with it. It's going to be Spider-Man does stop him, But Doc Ock still wins because, hey, you know, maybe Spidey's on the outs now worse than ever. Maybe he can't ever go back to Horizon Labs. Maybe
he can't go back to the Avengers even. Gets kicked off.
Maybe he can't go back to the
Avengers. There'd be no question then as well that Doc was... Oh, yeah. Because it's like, you know, it's like he'll be live forever as a saint who would have saved the world if it hadn't been for that awful Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It'll be a double win.
Yeah.
Ooh, maybe...
I love good Spider-Man.
You know, alternately, he could be making a giant laser cannon somewhere.
That's what makes it so awesome. He could be doing anything, and we're not going to find out till the next issue.
Or the end, or whenever, yeah. So. So, awesome. So there you go. Ends of the Earth. Read it. Check it out.
Very good.
Cosmic Feely.
Yeah, okay. I'm talking about something a little different this week. Following on the trend of different things I've been looking at recently. This week I'm looking at issue one of The Shadow from Dynamite Publishing. And I'm looking at this because it's being written by Garth Ennis. Preacher, Punisher, Boys, etc. Hitman fame.
What's the rating on this comic? Does it say parental advisory? Something like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, for mature.
I'm looking for it, you know, but T+. It's just rated T+. There's nothing especially anus in here. Now, I'm not massively familiar with The Shadow. The Shadow, of course, for the listeners who don't know, was a classic hero of the pulps way back in the day. Had his own radio show as well. Yeah, he knows the evil that lurks in the hearts of men. Who knows the evil that lurks in the hearts of men?
He was in that movie that Alec Baldwin was in.
Yes, Alec Baldwin was in that.
He was played by Baldwin. I mean, come on.
Quite a fun movie. he knows the evil that lurks in the hearts of men. What that actually means is rather vague. I've never been quite sure. Orson Welles used to play him on the radio show, you know. So he's never had a foot. A lot of comics companies have done different things with him. I think DC even had him for a time, maybe in the 80s. But this is Dynamite in their continuing attempt to license anything that they can get their hands on. That IDW's got the licensing for things that from the 80s and 90s. So Dynamite goes back a little further. They do the John Carter Amire stuff. They've launched the Spider, that other great pulp hero you've never heard of.
$6 Million Man,
Bionic Woman.
Actually.
This is Dynamite, you said. Dynamite,
yeah.
When am I getting Shadow versus Army of Darkness? Is that coming soon?
Well, I think Dynamite is a little busy this summer with their Prophecy crossover event, which will see Vampirella, Red Sonja, Kulan Gath, Dracula, the Reanimator, Panther, Athena, Dorian Gray, Eva, Alan Quatermain, and more all crossover.
Wow.
Wow.
That sounds like Extraordinary Gentleman like 5 or something. You know?
This time it's licensed.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, The Shadow number one. This is, I'm not entirely sure what to make of this, because it's quite vague, I think quite deliberately. But anyway, you can tell it's a Garth Ennis book, because it starts out with an extended sequence about the horror of war and man's inhumanity to man. Just covering all the atrocities committed by Japan in China during the war. And The Shadow knows. So The Shadow gives us this omniscient narration of all of these horrific things that happened. And then he kills an assortment of Japanese gangsters who are down at a pier, boarding a ship. And that's the most violent thing in the book. You know, there is eyeballs blasted out of sockets. You know, it's not like you see the eye. Well, no, there's the eyeball flying through the air. All right, never mind, scratch that. didn't see
yeah,
it.
Yeah, like Garth Ennis is going to write a comic and not let an eyeball fly through the air.
It's just all red. I didn't see it against the giant swoosh of blood shooting towards me. So, you know. He kills them all, except for one guy. The one guy, like, he kills the two head guys that he's come here to kill. And all the goons, well, no, he kills a bunch of guys. But then all the goons are standing around him and he's like, you know, the rest of you are merely hirelings, fools. I urge you, do not make the leap to scum. And one guy drops his gun and puts his hands up, you know.
Wow,
and
then Shadow sounds a lot like Bane.
Well,
never mind.
Scum. I'll raise you up. But some idiot goes, he's only one man, we can... And that's that. The Shadow just guns the rest of them down, except for that one guy who put his hands up, and he just tells him, on you go. Work hard and feed your family. So we get quite exciting an opening scene. Then the book just sort of grinds to a halt in the middle here, where the Shadow, Lamont Cranston by day, wealthy man about town, meets with two men from the government at the Algonquin Hotel to talk in very vague terms about what happened down at the pier. Like, these are bad men, there was something in the hold of the boat, we need to investigate more about this, we never actually say exactly what it is we have to do. It's a fairly long scene that really doesn't accomplish anything except to tell us that Cranston is on board with this, you know, that he's going to help them, and also that the two government guys just really don't like it. Well, one guy knows him, and then there's this younger government guy who's like, who is this jerk off? You know? But it's very good for showing, for just establishing the Shadow's character out of costume as well. I mean, as I say, I don't know much about the Shadow, but I don't believe that he was ever supposed to be a really, like, prescient supernatural character with, like, powers of prognostication, which he really seems to be displaying here. Like, the suggestion that he knows the evil in the hearts of men.
He had superpowers in the stupid Alec Baldwin movie. Like, he had magic powers and shit.
But what kind of magic powers exactly? It's been so long since I saw the film.
He, like, went to, like, a Tibetan temple or something, and there was, like, this magic dagger. I remember just the crazy...
Yeah, it seems like there was something like that.
He was, like, physically changed. Like, his face would physically change when he became Shadow. I mean, he's, like,
that
a
was just to make That was just to make him look like he looked in the comics and not look like Alec Baldwin, I think. Well, either way, in this, the notion that he knows the evil... seems to be, the story is called The Fire of Creation, just as I flip back to the start, and it features art by Aaron Campbell. Rather nice art by Aaron Campbell. Carlos Lopez does the colors too, but he kind of, there's one panel where he goofs the colors of two guys' suits, so it makes like the Shadow's talking smack about himself. But the idea that he knows the evil makes it look like he's actually got like psychic powers that allow him to know the crimes of the people in front of him, but not just reading the past, he also knows their future as well. Because in this scene in the hotel, while they're talking their boring talk, there's a little kid who's goofing around, and his mom's like, "Oh, Jonathan, stop it!" And the kid, but the kid's just continuously goofing around and running around, and so Cranston's leaving, and the kid's goofing around, running around, laughing, and the mother says, "I'm so sorry, I really." He's completely, and Cranston says, "No harm done, madam. He's unbearable. As soon as I get him home, let him be a child a little longer. He meets his fate 6 years from now, 5 miles above a place called Regensburg." And then he just walks off. So he's got the...
The ice is gonna break!
What's that from?
It's from Dead... What was the Christopher Walken...
Oh, yeah, the Dead Zone. I knew that zone. Sounded...
Yeah.
Yes, what kind of Dead Zone? Not this thing where he goes out of his way to stop it. It's like, that's fate, and that is the way the world will be.
God, I need to watch that again. I'm watching that tonight.
The comic's basically broken up into the three acts. The first act is that, the second act is the hotel, and then the final act here is Cranston with a long-term love interest character from the pulps, Margot Lane, who comes out to join him on the balcony in the middle of the night after they've had some good 1930s off-panel sex.
As Mickey from Superhero Time would say, they look at you as they close the door...
Yeah, except there's an opening afterwards. But it's like the scene in the hotel, just serves to give you more insight into Cranston, and he's like, this woman is just sort of here, you know. Can you see the future? She asks him, you know.
I'm privy to glimpses, shards. People are difficult. Children are easiest. They haven't the spiritual fog we've accumulated. Tracing the soul to the end of its path is simple enough.
Yeah, and he just describes how his powers work, and she says, can you see what happens to us? Meaning you and
I know what you mean, Miss Lane.
Which is all the prediction I need, thank you. It's like, he knows where that's going to end up from the sounding. You know, we get they go out of their way to quote some of the lines. You know, I know what was he says at the very start. You know, he does say, "I know that what evil lurks in the hearts of men," and he says, "The weed of crime bears bitter fruits," which was the famous closing line from the radio show. No, I'm doing this Batman voice. I should be doing Orson Welles, but I can't do Orson Welles. So.
That's good enough. Is it like
it'll do.
It's like Eddie Izzard trying to do. Never mind. There's a whole...
I kind of wish you would be doing the Christopher Walken voice now.
Yeah.
Not flirt with fate, Miss Lane. It is no gentle lover.
That's better. Go with that.
Hell no.
The night is very cold. Coming. he ends with this really sinister. "Are you going to be the shadow forever?" he asks her, and he says, "For longer than you will be, Margot Lane." What? What does that mean? they never finish it. It's very much a prologue chapter to the first issue. Like, you get a good strong action sequence to open up. It's a very trademarky NSC horrors of war type opening. It's like man's inhumanity to man, and never mind what superheroics can do to stop it, only avenge it type of thing, which is Ennis's way of doing. Men act outside the law to avenge the horrors men commit upon other men. That's Ennis. as I say, the middle scene is, it's just so vague, you know, it really does grind the comic to a bit of a halt, because they spend 5 pages sitting talking, and we really don't learn anything. We get some very vague discussion about the government, the direction the world is headed. If the mountain won't come to Muhammad, I'll make my own arrangements. Are we going after it? What choice do we have? Well, I know them from old. You know, all these really oblique sentences, and it's like, whatever. You're not really telling me anything. And then the final scene, again, is really just, it's all about showing you... It's interesting, because it's all about showing you, telling and showing, both is not one over the other, about what kind of character Cranston is, what the shadow is, but without ever actually being explicit in it at the same time. It's a very strange, very, I guess, ethereal, shadowy, if I may, kind of way of telling the story.
When can't say that they're not living up to the title.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they're being, I would say, another thing about it, it's probably being vague and insubstantial in a sort of play on the idea, or maybe on that idea. I don't know. It's interesting, but I'm not sure if I've been told enough about the story. I mean, I'm sure it'll all come together. I mean, I don't think I've ever truly read a bad Garth Ennis comic. Garth Ennis has too sure a grip of how to structure a story and how to tell a story to tell a bad story, you know. He's always rock solid on the fundamentals. But I don't know that it, for an isolated issue alone, that I've really learned enough about what this comic is actually going to be about, that I'm coming back for issue two or not. It's a very interesting take on the character, and you know, it's just vague enough to intrigue me as to exactly what his motivations and powers. I mean, there's the idea here, he shoots a guy and he's lying there dying, and he ungloves his hand and reaches down to him and his ring shines, and it is like maybe he reads his mind while he's dying, because he's able to then relate all the information that he gains from him. In his civilian identity, he relates it to the... He claims he knows them from years ago, but really he read the mind of the dying man when he was the shadow. He just relates it in to the government guys. So, you know, he's definitely playing on the side of good in as much as doing, you know, helping the government. I mean, maybe good is going too far with it. Very shades of gray. Very, very intriguing take on the character, but I'm not so sure that it's revealed enough about the story. I can't quite pin it down, which seems kind of appropriate in a sense. So if you enjoy a bit of Garth Ennis, but it's definitely not your standard Ennis either. Not the sort of thing I would have expected from Ennis, given his output in recent years with The Boys and with Jennifer Blood over at Avatar, I think is Jennifer Blood over at Avatar as well. Something a bit different. You might be tricked into thinking it's kind of like standard Ennis from the opening sequence, because it's like, whoa, boom, World War II. What a shock. Garth Ennis telling a World War II story? Well, wonders never cease. But it turns into something rather different, and I think that's one you got to read yourself. It's hard for me to come to a conclusion on it. So that's The Shadow. And I'm not...
Yeah, I got no interest in The Shadow. When you said Garth Ennis was doing it, my ears kind of perked up just a little bit. You know? Just a little.
No, that's, I think, all I can say about it.
Okay, cool. All right. So, for the finale, we're going to review Avengers vs. X-Men. Avengers fight the X-Men. Okay, so that's superhero time. And our fanboy versus, and thanks so much for joining us. And yes, no, there's more? Was there really? We don't superhero time too much. Anyway,
it was a big fight.
It basically is.
It was.
I mean, literally, it's like the Avengers,
you know what?
Fight.
This is the fight. They have the fight. They're going to expand on these fights in the miniseries. And you know what? The story starts now. They've kicked around. They've fulfilled the premise of the series. And now it's time for things to actually happen. This is not just going to be 12 issues of them fighting on a beach. And that's interesting to me. I think we should probably note as well that Jason Aaron wrote this issue.
Yep.
I didn't realize the writers were switching on an issue-by-issue basis. I thought each one was doing a clump. But Jason Aaron has picked this one up. So this is probably going to... This is only half the size, but it's still probably going to take you twice as long to read as the last issue.
You know,
because there
I...
are basically no big, giant, silent, double-page spreads in this issue, which immediately make me like it more than the first issue.
Yeah. Although, this almost goes too far in the other direction, because I really could have done without the word boxes. They just didn't really add anything to me.
What, the, like, man in a metal suit versus the mutant master of magnetism?
That was awesome.
This is no contest. You've never met Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that is exactly. Brilliant. I mean, I love that. I love that because that is exactly what I have been thinking since that teaser ad first came out. Magneto versus Tony Stark. Every goon on the internet who wants to rip into the series goes, what kind of fight's that going to be? And I'm like, do you seriously think Iron Man doesn't have some kind of anti-magnetic protocols in his armor? Really? Yeah. And then it's like the caption box practically preemptively called out every tool who made that joke and says, if you
then
think
there was
this,
like the telekinetic thing, because like it was always like if Professor X was around, you know, the fight's over. You know, he just makes everybody, you know, go to sleep or something. And yeah, Emma can't run it out. And then, yeah, Tony's got something built in for that, too. You know, Emma's out of the picture. You know,
I mean, it's fine. I was not as impressed by this issue for some reason in the last. And obviously, you guys love it, and I'm probably wrong. But
it's just a lot of fighting. You know, it is what it says on the tin.
I mean, it is what the title is. It's Avengers versus X. I mean, what do you expect? Are you wanting
no big
illusions? It's good. The Cyclops there throws his eye. There's lots of cool moments in this verse. I don't think the first issue had any moment that made you go, ooh, cool. Like, you know, this is no contest. You don't know what to do. There's one where Cyclops is pouring the eye beams on full force. Cap gets the shield up, walks into the beams, and just Cyclops right on the face with the shield.
Well,
yeah,
I think
that's right.
I think the difference here, and we talk about the difference in writing too, is, you know, I think it almost seems like Bendis was perfectly happy to just let Romita just go and just like, just draw big pages and it's less dialogue for me.
That's,
you know,
Bendis.
And that's Bendis. That's what Bendis does. But Aaron seemed to really want to, you know, I mean, yeah, it's filled with a lot more stuff. So you don't have some of the really great, you know, full page kind of art in this. But it's almost too far the other way for me. There's a lot of dialogue, there's a lot of text boxes, there's a lot of, and, you know, sometimes the text boxes are fine, I don't mind those occasionally, but when it's every page and almost every panel, and it's telling you things that really don't add that much, it's kind of like, okay, I get it, you know, can we just pull back just a little bit, it'd be cool, just let me bask in the glow of them beating the shit out of each other, you know, instead of having that broke up with, you know, the fourth nose broken in the last 8 minutes. Like, did I really need that piece of information?
I don't know. I thought that was pretty awesome. Organic
diamond.
Multi-billion dollar armor. The most expensive punch in history. I think, frankly, if we didn't have those text boxes, this could be very dry. There's a good sense of tongue-in-cheek with these text boxes that sort of owns up to the general ridiculousness of the issue. You notice how we're not giving a synopsis because there isn't one to give. It is they fight for 20 pages. But now remember, Jason Aaron's the guy that writes Wolverine and the X-Men as well, so he's definitely self-aware when it comes to the ridiculous elements of comics.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I really feel like without these... without these text boxes, you know, I think it would be in danger of being a bit po-faced. You know, I mean, the boxes like run the gamut. You know, sometimes they're like really purple prose. You know, what's that one at the? The thing that really happens in the issue is that Hope seems to be fully consumed by the power of the Phoenix. And burns Wolverine up, you know, and it's everything burning inside and out, taste the kiss of the Phoenix. You know, really, you know, some purple prose like that. But then on the other hand, Quicksilver shoots in and punches Magneto in the face, and it's family reunion at Mach 5. Whoosh! Yeah.
Now, JD, the book that you maybe should be reading is Wolverine and the X-Men, because, like, it's a crossover with the AVX in this issue. I thought about talking about it, but there's not a whole lot that happens in it. But in the issue, it's to the point where there are, like, this alien planet where they went, and it was basically Las Vegas in one issue, are making bets on which planet is going to be destroyed by the Phoenix Force next. I mean, that's it. Like, that's, like, you know, their big thing. You know, and that's, like, the kind of the flip side of the Jason era.
I'm not saying it's bad. I mean, yes, there are boxes that I liked, and there were elements of it. It just, for my taste... Not saying it's overall bad. It's just there were some times where it was just a lot, and it is a very textual issue in that respect. So I don't know. Like I said, it's just a touch too far in the other direction from the Bendis big pages, nobody talking. This is still a lot of fighting, and the action is great. I'm just saying for my taste, you know, somewhere. I'm not saying it's. I'm not saying it's the complete opposite. I'm just saying it's just a touch too far in the other direction for me. but no, I mean, otherwise, the art's great. The story's great.
JRJR has really done some nice work on this issue. I mean, I don't know if he was on like a slight time crunch or something that forced him to knock this one out a little quicker, because that was basically 60 pages in a month, you know. This is some of the nicest work I've seen from him.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of panels here on Captain America's face where it doesn't even really look like him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I
don't mean that it doesn't look like him so it looks bad, you know, or anything. No, I think he's done... I think I enjoy the art more in this issue than in the first issue as well.
And I like the matchups here, you know, as far as, like, who is fighting who in this, as far as, you know, in some of the respects. I mean, I think it's kind of interesting seeing, you know, Emma fighting Iron Man, you know, because of, again, the combination of the armor and Diamond, and then right around to Magneto. They talk about T'Challa fighting, you know, Storm for a second here, or them having a sort of argument, which they're married. You may remember that.
I don't know when that last came up. But
probably whenever they left the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
But no, there's a lot of interesting, you know, again, this fight between Scott and Captain America continues. He even calls Captain America fascist, I thought, which was interesting because it's not a, you know, and that's kind of what's interesting is I think you could really kind of get on either side of this. I mean, it's not that Scott isn't crazy because he is, but he does kind of have a point. I mean, Phoenix power or not, does anyone really have the right to come in and, you know, take another person just because they think that person might be, you know, potentially dangerous. Yeah. So
this isn't like Civil War, where, you know, despite whatever intentions, there really was a good side and a bad side.
Yeah.
They might have tried to paint it.
In Wolverine and the X-Men, Cap even goes, like, all the events in the issue of Wolverine and X-Men take place before AVX number 0, before they've, you know, gone to Utopia. Mm. So, like, Cap comes to
Wolverine's skull, and he's like, you know, are you on my side? And he says, yeah, I'm on your side. I know full well, you know, what's going to happen and why we need to stop it. And he says, but think of what you're doing. He says, think of Utopia as a compound full of heavily armed religious fanatics, and you're the feds butting in, telling them what to believe and how to live. It won't go well.
Mm.
And so, yeah, you're basically getting that. You know,
well, it's like, well timed for this too, because of course, you know, as far as in America, I don't know how international this is, but of course, April 19th was the anniversary of the Waco compound raid. So that's kind of interesting because that was just this past week. So, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Namor fighting Namor. Sorry.
Just call him the Submariner.
Submariner fighting Thing, fighting Colossus. You know, there's just some interesting matchups. Mm-hmm. I did like the line earlier in this when I can't remember who it was, but they were like, when did Scott go crazy? And it's like,
yes.
Wolverine's like, look, I've been trying to tell anybody that would listen for a long time, and nobody's been paying attention. Welcome to the party. You know?
It's like nobody was paying attention because it was Wolverine that was sane.
When Wolverine tells you somebody is crazy, it's like, yeah, talk on some more.
Yeah.
Like you could talk.
Oh, Power Man is like.
But I mean, the interesting question now is like, well, where is this? You know, Hope, the issue ends with Hope on the run. So would mean to the Avengers and the X-Men keep fighting? No, I mean, I don't really think they do. I don't think that's where the story goes next. It doesn't. It's not just going to be
Avengers.
But I think the objectives will stay the same. I don't think they'll keep fighting on this beach. But yeah, I mean, certainly we can see that the X-Men's objective, Scott's objective, is going to be to find and protect Hope, whereas the Avengers' objective is going to be to find and destroy Hope, or at least stop the Phoenix in that process.
Again, yeah, we get that shot at the end of the issue we didn't even talk about, where like the other Avengers that aren't there fighting, like Thor and Beast.
Avengers
and
in space.
Yeah, they're in space for the bird to show up. You know,
I'd like a thing. I mean, they've got after that they've got the page. You know, Avengers versus X-Men coming in April, and they show you where all the tie-ins are. But I think I'd like it if they went a little more Fear Itself-y, and they were like, follow X into and in the case of these. Spacebound Avengers. It is follow these Avengers into Secret Avengers number 26.
We need a little number on the cover. We need like 81.
Little triangle.
Two, you know.
I mean, it's hard to do it. They obviously want to advertise all the tie-ins. So, you know, we have the ads for New Avengers, Avengers and Wolverine and the X-Men here. But the fact is that all of those comics are completely unrelated to AVX, save for the fact that they serve as a framing. The events of AVX serve as a framing sequence that goes on either side of a flashback to something that is continuing the plot from the regular comic.
Right.
Yeah, I know the Wolverine and the X-Men there. That's before. I don't know about the rest of these. I haven't read any of them.
Well, New Avengers 24 starts as a bookend, start and finish. It's the attack on the island. It's the Avengers jumping out of the helicarrier, and then the actual issue is Luke Cage and Jessica Jones having it out about their current living situation and the safety of their child and everything. It's a good issue, because it's the sort of thing Bendis does really well, but it's not by any stretch of the imagination anything to do with AVX. And Avengers 25, again, similarly, bookend is there, but the story is actually about the Avengers rounding up AIM after they escaped at the end of the Norman Osborn storyline, and Captain America, you know, really needing a win to put in something in the win column after the doubts that all the recent public outcry against the Avengers have made him feel, and the things Viper said to him in the recent storyline. And it's, again, nothing to do with what's actually happening in AVX. Which, in a sense, I'm almost thankful for it, honestly, because Bendis's, they're good issues. This is the thing. They're actually quite readable comics. But Bendis's tie-ins to the crossovers he's written, like, historically, are shite. Like, the Secret Invasion stuff was the absolute worst. Like, apart from an issue of New Avengers that revealed the Spider-Woman was the Skrull Queen, the tie-ins were just even Fear Itself. Like, oh, 20 pages for the Hulk and Thing fighting, and they knocked down Avengers Tower at the end. Like, he can't do it. He can't do these tie-ins. So the fact that these tie-ins for this month are actually about carrying on the stories that are already going on in the books with a nod in the direction of AVX is actually a good thing. But we'll see how it goes with subsequent issues.
Yeah.
And as interested as I'm in Avengers versus X-Men, I wouldn't buy tie-ins. I mean, I would. The Elf kind of killed it, and then, like, whatever they did before, was it Siege before Fear Itself? Killed it, too. I didn't want it.
About it, though, this is the way to do it, because,
yeah.
I mean, for the people that are reading these other issues, they're just going to get more information, a little more insight, but probably not any huge, you know, reveals. Otherwise, you get AVX, what, is it 2 issues a month, or...
Every two weeks.
So, I mean, perfect. I think that's a great way to do it.
Yeah, no, if they've done one thing right with this so far, and I'm not saying they've only done one thing right, but if there's one thing that has to be put ahead of everything else that they've done right, it is the no tie-ins.
Yes.
Just tie-ins in the regular comics, no piles of miniseries, just tie-ins in the ordinary comics that would be affected by this story under normal circumstances anyway. Amazing Spider-Man isn't full of tie-ins. You
and
know?
It's not the same scale, but they're doing the same thing with, like, the Court of Owls, where it's you know, the Owls tie-in to... Batman. They're essentially
but that doesn't even have a miniseries. You know, that's just actually happened in Batman.
I mean,
Batman.
That's even happening. Yeah. So, but
which,
still,
which we didn't review that, but that was good.
It was good. It's an interesting.
Yeah. Oh, actually, hey, you know something else? I meant to just mention in passing something I forgot to mention. Was Manhattan Project number 2?
Oh,
that
I did
was
see that came out.
Yes. So last issue, Zen Power Death Buddhists and Robert Oppenheimer consumed alive by his cannibalistic evil twin Joseph, and then like splintered into a myriad infinite variant personalities living within one incomplete Oppenheimer. This issue, evil cyborg Werner von Braun.
Oh wow! Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So I think you still like that book.
Yes, I'm not sure what it's about. I wonder if it's going to have a story. This is going to be S.H.I.E.L.D. all over again. S.H.I.E.L.D. suggested, and you know, we're still waiting for the last 2 issues of S.H.I.E.L.D. because Hickman seems to be very busy, but he said they will come. But S.H.I.E.L.D. always did give the sense that there was a story happening. 2 issues into the Manhattan Projects. 1 issue was about Robert Oppenheimer leading up to the revelation that he was made up of millions of different split personalities, hence the title, Infinite Oppenheimers. And this one is called Rocket Man. And so it's just about Werner von Braun and the various other scientists. It's about the Inglorious Bastards, essentially, and how all the scientist heroes of the Manhattan Project go into Nazi Germany to recruit Werner von Braun.
All right.
Wow. Cool.
And he has a giant cyborg robot arm.
Well, who wouldn't want one of those?
Who wouldn't want one of those? Yeah, still enjoying that.
Nice.
Still recommend that.
Well, as we have pointed out many a time, we will not be here next week.
Nope.
I will be
you
at
BotCon. You got the BotCon flu.
Yes. So, yep. XV and Brian will be here on Wednesday and picking me up, and then Thursday we go to Dallas.
Can't
so we'll be at BotCon.
Eddie.
So if you're going to be at BotCon, look for us, say hi. You know, love to talk to you, of course. And then we will be back not... obviously next week, but the week after, for our 100th episode. I need to retweet them all. Someone is writing a drinking game for our 100th episode.
A lot of them seem to center on me.
No, I think it's pretty balanced. There's one about, you know, if you mention Dan Ketch and I say shut up or something of the like. So, you know,
there's some awesome, right?
The ones that are about me.
So, you know, no, there's a good balance of stuff, I think, on if we mention Gail Simone, you take a drink.
Okay. Yeah, you need to retweet all those then, because I'm just seeing them intermittently.
Yeah, no, there's a whole.
Jonathan Hickman has to be one of those words. It has to be at
yeah,
this point.
We may have to help him. We may flesh out, you know, a little bit and come up with some of the things we do. But I like it. I think it's interesting that someone's taking the time to... actually think about it. They know us really well, which is kind of so that's great. But so maybe you'll want to partake of that. I'll try to get that all together and tweet it out or maybe a link to it. I'll put it up on the show page and we'll have that ahead of time so you can get your alcohol ready before you listen to the 100th episode of Fanboy Versus.
And as I have pointed out several times, I get to see the Avengers this Thursday.
Yes, you do.
Hell with you.
Yeah. But that means I can't rub it in your faces next week. So it's all good. So,
no.
But we all have to watch it before the next show, right?
That will be the subject of the 100th episode.
We're talking to you, JD.
I know. I've got... You know? Yeah. I will...
Don't wait for it to hit the dollar theater.
I think the
don't
talk...
Don't make it be Green Lantern all over again.
No, no, no.
Yeah,
I
don't
think...
Green Lantern.
No. I think the talk is that we're going to try to go really early on Saturday. Because that seems to be a good time to go. I mean, obviously, I live in Oklahoma City, and there's not really a wide selection of really good theaters. So, that means that they're really busy, especially opening weekend. And
damn tickets booked. No, mine are booked. They're sitting over there.
Well, you can get the tickets. I don't mention this often, but I have some like social anxiety, so it's really hard for me to go into like a really packed theater. I'll do it. I'll brave it, but we'll see what happens. So, but it means I have to get there early and do all this nonsense. But anyway, the plan is though to see it, and then we'll go maybe get some free comics, because don't forget that's May 5th.
Woohoo!
So it's great. You can go watch Avengers, go get your free comics, free comic book day, support your local comic book shop, you know, maybe buy some things while you're there as well. Always important to mention that.
Yeah.
it's great to pick up the free issues and partake in whatever artists or creators or, you know, other local people they may have at the shop, but you know, buy something too. It's a great time to get trades. A lot of shops offer sales and things at that time. I know if you're looking for someone in the area, we're going to mention Gail Simone again. Last year, she did a really great job. She basically went through and retweeted every shop that was running some sort of sale. You know, if all they had to do is tweet her, and then she was retweeting them. So if you're looking for stuff local, you know, maybe follow her or check with your local shop, see what they're doing. But definitely buy stuff. Trades, it's a good time to get trades. So.
Yep. And there's a sale on Comixology Day for Swamp Thing for Earth Day.
Ooh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, Swamp Thing is 99 cents an issue, and that does include the Alan Moore issues. So.
And the current stuff?
I don't know if it's the current stuff. I think it's like old stuff, but it includes a lot of old Swamp Thing. Like, man. The first issue of like the 1970 Swamp Thing was free. Like, it's free. Might as well just get that.
This would be that would be perfect. I'll have to check that out because if it.
But
is
I'm
the
thinking
current...
about some of those Alan Moore issues. I wish I knew which were the best ones because I want some of them.
It's all good in there.
It's all good.
There's probably Swamp Baby birthing and stuff in there. Who knows?
I want the one where like he like leaves the guy in the house and he has to hack his arm off. Is that one in there?
Does Alan Moore write that into every single one of his series?
No, that's just violent rape.
God. Violent rape, but that's what happened to the guy in... That was in Watchmen as well.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, more rape is Alan Moore's solution.
Well, no, but that the guy had to hack his hand. He wouldn't want to cut his arm off to get out of that burning house. Anyway, that must be something that, like... keeps Alan Moore up at night, that he's going to get, like, tied to something and the house is burning down and he's going to have to decide to cut his own arm off to get out.
Hmm. Swamp Thing will just grow it back.
Yeah.
He'll just grow it back.
So,
I mean, very little Swamp Thing.
All right. Well, that is our show. We're going to get out of here so that Chris Mafila can get some rest. You know, just barely survive through this show. But again, thanks so much for joining us. And, you know, this is great. Hope you'll show up for our live 100th episode. Should be a lot of fun.
We'll probably be tweeting like bastards about that during the week.
Yeah, that's the idea. So, and then, like I said, join us. We're going to be doing a live from BotCon RFC, not Wednesday, and or not Thursday for like our regular show. I think we're talking Friday is when we're going to do that. So RFC will be a little bit delayed, but most of us will be live from John's apartment at BotCon. So big stuff coming up this week. If you haven't checked out all the stuff that's going on with RFC, it's BotCon. It's big. Give me a lot of big news. So check out the Twitter feed. The at TF Radio is the one you want for that, as well as our Facebook fan page, like that as well. So again, us, we're at fanboyversus.com and at fanboyvs on Twitter. So follow us there. So for Chris Triplett, for Chris McFeely, I'm JD. Thanks so much for tuning in, and please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus.
This has been Fanboy versus
Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.